You are listening to the Mick and Mac GAA Football Podcast.
Okay, hello and welcome back to the Mick and Mac GAA Football Podcast. Mr. John McMahon is still with me. I can't get rid of him. Mac, how are you?
I'm grand, Mick. I'm a bit insulted by that. No, look, there's other stuff in life going on with these podcast buds, so I don't have all the free time in the world like yourself, unfortunately.
I always have to get a dig in at the start of every.
Oh, you're a dose. You're a dose. You're a wannabe dub.
Okay, we'll move on from that. Delighted to be joined by Road Nappy Baller, Anton Sullivan. Anton, thanks for coming on.
Well, lads, how's things? Delighted to come on today and have a chat with you. Looking forward to the next hour or so, a bit of crack with you, a bit of banter.
Yeah, how's all with yourself?
Yeah, all's great, thank God. Yeah, suppose looking forward to getting back to the football now in the next couple of weeks. It's great to see it resuming again. It wasn't looking good there a couple of weeks ago. We thought there was going to be no action. So, delighted to come back. I suppose getting back into work and stuff and a bit of routine again, which is great. And I suppose get out of this COVID thing without any problems. Right? So that's a good thing too.
Absolutely. And I mean, what is the situation for yourself now with Road and Offaly? The championship's been set up, hasn't it?
Yeah, so our club championship is kicking off on July 29th. It's the first round. So we're hoping to go back on the 29th of June, resuming contact training. Well, I don't know if it's actually we're allowed contact until mid-July, but we're back in the field and it was from the 29th of June. The structure of the championship has been given to us in the last couple of days. So it's two groups of four and the top two in each group go through the semi-finals and play off and then the finals. So they're hoping to run it off in a 10-week period. So it'll be quick and snappy, which is good. And something different for a change. You know, usually we have one big group of eight senior teams and you play everyone and then it's kind of quarterfinals and semi-finals. So it does drag out. So this is kind of a bit better. And every game will be kind of meaningful and it'll be a bit of bite to it, I suppose.
Yeah, I suppose, what is the intentions? Obviously, Road will be wanting to win the championship, won't they?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, we were going for four in a row last year, and yeah. Forban pipped us in the final, which was a bit of a blow to us. But no, listen, we'll get back in the horse again, and we'll go again this year. We're looking forward to it. I suppose that bit of hurt from last year will drive lads on to hopefully win the championship. But we're looking to bring in number 30 championship title to our club, which would be great to reach that milestone for such a small little place like Road. It'd be a fantastic achievement. So listen, we'll take each game as it comes and we look forward to it.
I suppose the next step would be try and compete for Leinster. I mean, you've got a few finals, haven't you, and you've been runners up a couple of times. Is a step up, I suppose, the next thing to do after that?
Yeah, well, I suppose we've played in five Leinster finals since 2008. We've lost every one of them, unfortunately. You know, but every year it gets harder and harder to get out of Offaly because I suppose teams are coming and they're better prepared now, and there's more coaches and strength and conditioning and all that. That's becoming more popular every year. So teams are coming and they're throwing really everything at you. So I always find getting out of Offaly is actually really difficult each year. But then when you do get out of Offaly, or if you do get out of Offaly, it kind of, the shackles are off, you can enjoy it a bit more, you know. The pressure's off a bit, so listen, we won't look beyond Offaly this year. As I said, we'll take each game as it comes and we won't look any further than that.
Yeah, sure. And just in relation to this year's championship, I mean, I've read a few articles, people saying about the amount of injuries that could happen because of so many games in short space of time. I mean, you can even see in the Premier League, I think it was Granit Xhaka last night went down injured after 8 minutes or something. Is that something you'd be worried about?
Well, to be honest, when the initial break came, when we broke up from Offaly, I trained maybe hard for about 3 weeks after because I didn't know what was ahead of me, you know. So I kept training hard for about 3 weeks. And then when I realised what was kind of ahead, I took a break. I took about 4 or 5 weeks off. I kept up a bit of strength and conditioning work at home in the garden. I did a bit of walk and stuff. But regarding training, I didn't do any running. I just took a complete break for 4 or 5 weeks. And then I kind of awfully had set up a program. Well, they were doing the program, but I kind of just took my foot off the gas a bit. I said, there's no point really when I didn't know. I was kind of going to burn the candle at both ends. And then when it did come back, I'd have no appetite when it was resuming, you know. So I've kind of been getting back into the program the last 3 or 4 weeks. So that's where I'm kind of at. I'm in good shape. I feel fresh. I'm glad I took the break now, to be honest. I feel good. I'm doing a bit of cycling as well, which is just something different from running, you know, just change it up a bit. I'm really fresh. I'm looking forward to getting back to road now in 2 weeks' time. We still do Zoom sessions twice a week with the club, so it's good to link in with the lads and there. But regarding getting back collectively, it won't be for another 2 weeks or so. So I'm really looking forward to getting back to that.
And will you find it hard, I suppose, or was it? You find more people, I suppose, we're happy to have those few weeks break because you need to count the setups are so intense.
Yeah, well, I suppose for myself, it's been all go the last 4 or 5 years with no break at all. Like you're going from, say, with road, we won the last 3 years, so it was kind of you're exiting the Leinster Club Championship and you're going straight back into Offaly then. So it was all year round you were going, you were getting no break. So to be honest, I was glad of the break the last 2 or 3 months. It just to freshen me up completely because I'm not getting any younger now, 28. So I suppose you need a bit of downtime too. Yeah, well, not too bad, but you still do need to freshen up. Like I see there's a lot of under-20s coming into the Offaly squad this year and, you know, they're fresh and they're young and they're mad to get going at it. So it is harder to kind of keep up with those younger lads. But no, the break will do me the world of good. I'm sure across the board, lads will have enjoyed the break. Something different, you know what I mean? And, like, as you know yourself, or as you know, like the GA season is hectic. You know, there's drinking bans and whatnot. At least lads could have enjoyed the last couple of months and had a few beers and barbecues and, you know, that kind of way with their family and friends. Well, not so much their friends, but their family anyways, which was important too, you know?
And Anton, touching on the Offaly and bits and pieces, like say last year, what did you make of your season last year?
We had an up and down season, to be honest. We were very lucky to survive in the Division 3. We left possibly 2 or 3 games behind us, but we scraped out a Sligo on the last day with a victory, and we needed that to keep up. And we set up, but we kind of met the Tuesday night after that game, and we had a good chat to ourselves. We'd meet in the first round of the championship, and we kind of said, listen, we're going to go. We went back to our clubs for a week after that Tuesday night, but we said before we had left that we were going to really come back strong for 6 weeks. There was going to be no drinking, no kind of acting the maggot or anything like that. We're just going to focus on Meath and really give it a good shot. Because listen, we were going down to Meath, playing them in their own backyard, their Division 2 team. It was a step up for us, so we needed to have everything like in place for that. There was no point in going up to Navan half prepared or half fit because we would have been better out the gate. So we knew that from the get-go. So we really kind of were focused on Meath. We did really good homework on them. And really, we left the game behind us that day in Navan. We should have beaten them. They got a lucky goal with maybe 2 or 3 minutes to go. We were 5 points up. Niall McNamee had missed the goal opportunity to put us 8 clear, and then 5 minutes later they went down the field and got a goal and brought back to 2 points. Instead of us going 8 clear, it was back to 2, you know what I mean? And they probably had a bit more on the bench as well that day to see out the game, whereas we probably were struggling maybe for a bit of fresh legs in the bench, and that was the difference at the end of the day. But listen, we had a good run, the qualifiers. We beat London, we beat Sligo. We went to Port Leash then. I suppose that was our third game in a row that kind of week. We were playing Leash, so I think we just tired, to be honest, against Leash in the last 15 minutes, and they just kind of ran away 4 or 5 points winners in the day. But then they went down and played Cork the following week, and Cork bet them out the gate. So I'd say Leash kind of tired the following week. You know, Cork had a break after the Munster semi-final game. Again, I don't know who they played, but they had obviously a break of 2 or 3 weeks there, so they were fresh going into that game. But all in all, it was a good season under John Martin. It was a first season under John, and John would have kind of learned a lot about us as well in the first year. It was more so finding our feet under John and him getting to know us a bit more. But this year we kind of hit the ground running. We had a really good league so far. The last game against Down, we were kind of we didn't play well at all. We were very poor. Down beat us by 8 points, but that was a promotion match. If we'd have beaten Down, we were kind of sitting with Cork then for promotion. So listen, hopefully we'll see out the last 2 league games by the end of the year, and we'll see what way we finish up in the league anyways.
Fingers crossed, Anton. And like, say for yourselves, like, you hear a lot of, like, you know, like teams putting emphasis on the league and bits and pieces. Like, do you feel when you're starting off, like, just put a lot of emphasis on the league, or is championship like your main object? Like, what are you thinking in that regard?
Well, say for starting back, we met in October. Our emphasis was we'd no one in the Leinster club, which was a great help. We'd all club teams were knocked out between intermediate, junior, and senior. We'd everyone was back with Offaly from say Halloween, the bank holiday weekend in October. Everyone was back, which was a huge help. Whereas previous years, you'd have lads scattered, coming and going late. You know what I mean? So it was great to have everyone just back at one time. But we really focused on the Burn Cup, getting a good run in the Burn Cup, trying to get as many games as possible, competitive games as possible, getting lads as much game time as possible, and then being ready to hit the ground running for the league. But our main goal this year was getting promoted out of the league. That was our main aim. Try and get up to Division 2, because you're playing better teams, and you're playing, like, as you said, you're playing better teams. So essentially, you're going to improve by playing the better teams each week. And then obviously bring that momentum into the championship. That's what we were looking at. But we never looked at the first round of the Leinster championship at all. It was just mainly league and focusing that and trying to get out of Division 3. That was our main focus.
You were mentioning John Mahon there, Anton, and he has Mark Feehan with him as a coach. I know Mark well. He coached me a few years ago in Ballyboden. I mean, what have they brought to the table in Offaly?
They've been brilliant, and I'd say John would know Dermot Sheridan as well from Cavan. Absolutely top class. They've been top class. Dermot is, I would rank him up as one of the best I've been involved with so far in my football career.
Yeah, he's very good.
His knowledge is unbelievable. Both coach inside of it and strength and condition, and we're so lucky to have him. You know, Mark Fee is an excellent coach as well, and you know John wouldn't let the boys do it a bit. He wouldn't really interfere that much, but if there's something he'd said, he'd come in and he'd say it, you know. But John's brilliant. He's a great character. He's brilliant around the dressing room. Everyone's really fond of him, which is really important, I feel. And we've a good balance there between Dermot, Mark and John, and they really are getting the most out of us. And I suppose with the under-20s coming on board this year, they've added strength and depth to the squad that we haven't had maybe in the last couple of years. You know, we've the Keane Johnson, Keane Farrell have come on board. They're really good footballers. And they've added something to it. So all in all, it's very positive. It's just a pity the breakup at Kem, because we were having a good kind of season so far, and I'm not sure kind of what will happen when we go back, because it's been a bit scattered, you know.
Yeah, and you were mentioning earlier on there when you were talking to John about getting a good start in the O'Byrne Cup and stuff. Do you think momentum is very important for counties like Offaly, I suppose, just to get a good run going as the season progresses?
Well, I feel it is, because like you're looking at Offaly, like we've won nothing in the last I can't even remember the last time. I think we won Division 4 in 2015, but as a group, we've won nothing. We haven't achieved anything. So we were hoping as a group to win something, win a bit of silver. Like, even though it's the Burn Cup, it's still silver at the end of the day. It'll give you confidence, especially the younger lads coming into the squad. It'll give them a bit more confidence. Like you're playing in the winter months where it's kind of heavy, it's slog, and you know, it's good for them younger lads to see that kind of style of football as well. I think for us in Offaly, it's hugely important. Like I even see with Longford beat us in the Burn Cup final. Like they carried the momentum straight through to the league, and they were having a brilliant league as well, like us. So I think for teams like Offaly and Longford or the so-called lesser teams, as to say, the Burn Cup is vital. It is vital in my opinion, and bringing in your momentum into the league.
Yeah, and I suppose, What are your thoughts on this Tier 2 Championship talk that people are going on about? Was it something you'd be in favour of?
I don't mind, to be honest. I suppose if you're not good enough to get up into Division 2 football to that standard, then, well, I think there should be maybe a second-tier championship, because it's going to give you games. It's going to give you more games to improve. And essentially, like as I said, the lesser teams, that's what you want. You want more games. You want to improve. And it's going to give you a chance, maybe, if you could win that competition, then to get up with the big boys, you know what I mean? So I was in favour. The more games for players, the better. That's the way I would see it. It beats running around, training every night of the week. At least if you have a game to look forward to the weekend or every 2 weeks or so, you've something to look forward to. And that's what I think, anyways.
And you mentioned Dermot Sheridan there, Anton. So, Anton, what's the crack with Dermot? He kept that fierce quiet.
He's your strength and conditioning coach, and then he does a bit of coach on the field with the defenders as well. But mainly he will be our full-time strength and conditioning coach. I didn't know Dermot at all until he came on board with Offaly. But I know that Cavan were looking to get him back this year with him, but he stayed with us for another year, thank God. But I'd be really gutted now if we lost someone like Dermot, because He's absolutely top class. He's really, really good. I really rate him that high. And I know a lot of lads from chatting, different lads, Mickey Quinn and stuff, they really rate him very highly as well. I know he would know some of the Longford lads, so they really rate him very highly as well. So I wouldn't like to lose him at all, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. And like, he was a good player himself. Like, he'd be a good asset to even, like, say, some of your centre half backs, full backs. Like,
yeah, absolutely. And he, as I said, he does a bit of coach work on the field with the defenders. He'd be bringing them in and he'd be talking and stuff like that, different scenarios. He is really good to the defenders, I know that. Not as much to the forwards, because obviously he was a backsman in his day. So he does a lot of coaching with the defenders, and especially he works closely with the goalkeeper as well. There's a lot of kickouts and stuff with him. But as I said, Dermot's brilliant, and I really hate to lose him in the future, you know.
And Anton, you were talking there a while ago about just the lack of silverware in Offaly over the last few years. I mean, why was it such a lean period for a county like Offaly that had such a proud footballing tradition?
Well, I suppose, like, for a lot of years there was a lot of managers coming and going, and there was no stability there at all. For the Offaly footballers, like, since I started in 2010, I've seen nearly at least five or six managers in that time, you know, and I'm only, that's what, 10 years ago? It's only a manager every 2 years, which is probably not good enough, you know. Then I suppose we lost a lot of lads that want to commit because of Offaly weren't doing well at the time, and that would be a big thing. Some lads went travelling and some lads opted out, and I suppose a lot of it would have been too. Dublin were so dominant in Leinster that lads probably thought, what's the point in playing football? You know, we're not going to win anything, we're not going to achieve anything. And for years, it was difficult. It was difficult playing for Offaly, you know. Like, sometimes you might have lost a Leinster club or Leinster championship match, and you'd be heading for the qualifiers. You'd be just wishing that, oh, geez, I'd love to just come back to my club, you know what I mean? Just get this out of the way. But no, since John has come in, it's been brilliant. Everyone has really bought in. He's put a good structure, of management team in place. And he's a plan. He had a plan for everyone the first night he met us. And he made it clear what he wanted to achieve. And he's a vision for us. So everyone has bought into that vision. You know, I suppose this year we've been struggling with a few injuries. Four or five lads have been injured and they've been a big loss. So I suppose for a team like Offaly, we can't really afford to be losing anyone. We need everyone fit and healthy and raring to go. But hopefully now that this lockdown has come, we'll get them lads back in the field when we're ready to go. I think we've Carlow in the first round of the championship. So I'd expect us to have a fully fit squad, providing everyone comes back healthy from the club championship. But I'd be really looking forward to seeing what Offaly can bring to the table with a full, fit, healthy squad raring to go for the championship, you know.
And you were mentioning some of those young lads that are part of the panel over the last few years. We were mentioning on the Tier 2 there. Is the fear for you maybe that some of those lads wouldn't commit if it was a Tier 2 championship? Do you think they would rather obviously be in the normal championship playing, getting the chance to play the likes of Dublin and the bigger teams?
Yeah, there is that aspect of it too. But I suppose when you're starting out, like especially when I was starting out anyways, and I'd say it's the same for these young lads, all you want to do is represent your county. So I'm sure if it means you have to play in a two-tier championship for a year or two, so be it. But at least you've a goal. If you can win that Tier 2, you get up with the big boys then. You know, it's not, there's light at the end of the tunnel, as they say. It's not all doom and gloom. But I suppose for a young lad starting out, it's probably a perfect opportunity, especially for younger lads coming in now, that they can play against teams at their own level and they can get experience and they can get better and they can improve themselves. Like, just say for argument's sake, if we went out to play Dublin next weekend, like, what's the point? Like, that would crush their confidence completely. Dublin would probably beat us by 30 points. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's no point in beating around the bush about. That's what will probably happen. Like, but whereas if we're playing against teams at our own level, say the likes of Longford and the likes of like Down and Derry and all these teams, like, that are in Division 3 and Division 4, like, you're going to improve as a team and you're going to improve yourself, which is essentially what you want to do as a footballer, and you're going to win games hopefully as well. So I would see this as a perfect platform for the younger guys to come into, you know, find yourself at senior inter-county football, hopefully win a few games and gradually improve and get better, and then maybe tackle the big boys when you're ready for them then, you know.
Yeah, and like, so you were kind of referenced Dublin there. Like, I nearly use, like, say, a game against Dublin for young lads to learn a lot from. Okay, fair enough, you don't learn from beatings, but even just to get the young lads to watch the Dubs, Anton, if you get me.
Absolutely, I understand that side of it too. But say if you're a young lad coming through and you're 19 or 20 and you're going to Croke Park and you're humiliated, that's not really good either for you. But I understand the side for you and what you're saying, that you're learning what they're doing, and like all, I do get that. But I just feel for the tier two thing, I think it's a great opportunity for lads to find themselves, especially younger players at intercounty footballer, and see what they need to improve on. Like say the two Keens, as I mentioned, they're coming in, like, they're not the finished article. They need to work on their strength and conditioning, they need to work on other areas of their game. And by playing teams at their own level, they can do that and they can find themselves. And then when they get to a stage where they're ready, hopefully maybe a county like Offaly might be ready to be able to compete against other teams then.
Yeah. And like he's a club mate of yours there. Like, tell me about the impact that like say Niall McNamee has around like the dressing room, young lads coming up.
Yeah, Niall's huge. He's great to have around both at club and county level. He's been injured. He hasn't played with us at all this year. He's been injured. He got a bad head injury in the semi-final last year, so he's still not right from that. But he's been a brilliant presence for the lads, you know, especially the younger lads, as I said. Pulling them to one side, having a chat, telling them how to improve their game. Like for someone like him to be around and coaching them, it's brilliant for them. Like, you know what I mean? It's really great. Like I remember when I started out, Kieran McManus, he was at the end of his career, and he was a brilliant coach for me. You know, I learned so much from him when I started out. So for someone like Niall to have around for the younger lads is absolutely brilliant. Like even for us, like say I consider myself an experienced player, but I'm still learning off Niall as they go as well. Like he'd still pull me to one side and he'd say I could do something different or something better. So you're always learning in my eyes anyways.
You referenced the two young lads that have come into the panel, Anton. How good are the young lads coming through in Offaly tomorrow? How far could they go?
Yeah, we've about five or six lads from the under-20s that have come on board this year, and they've really added depth to the squad. They're fresh, they're enthusiastic, they're willing to learn, and they're really pushing the older lads, I have to say. John doesn't care if you're 18, if you're 35, if you're playing well in your form, he'll play you. That's the way he is. So yeah, they've really added freshness and brought a freshness to the squad. And they've been top class. I really have to compliment them. They've been really, really good. And they're so eager to learn. That's what I like about them. They know they're not the finished article and they always want to learn. Like, even as I said, they pull you to one side, they'll have a chat with you, or even a WhatsApp. Some of them might text you a WhatsApp there. Some even you're not trained. How can I improve this? They're always eager to learn. But I see that across the board for younger lads anyways. Like even club lads that are coming through, they're always eager to learn. They're giving you a text or whatnot, or giving you a phone call. I think the youth of today very eager to learn and improve themselves as quickly as possible, so they can establish themselves as quickly as possible.
And I mean, there's a lot of talk about Keane Johnston, not just within Offaly, I suppose nationwide. He's well known. Well, has he got like a good head and shoulders for that? I mean, because the pressure can get to him, I suppose, at a young age. There's a lot of talk about him.
Yeah. Well, I there is a lot of talk about him and stuff, but you know, I remember having a chat with him. I just tell him to kind of keep his head grounded, keep himself focused, because if you get caught up in that stuff, it can be no good for you either. You know, like you see a lot of the top players, like they kind of just keep their heads down, to focus on what they need to do and to get better. But like for a young player of his caliber, and I've seen him in action, he's top class. But you can get caught up in the other side of it too, and that's no good for you either. So hopefully he learned quickly. You know, I know last year he got caught up with a few things on the social media side, and he probably would have regretted doing that now, looking back now. But I suppose he's another year older, he's another year wiser. And as I said, I wouldn't really pass any marks on that, because he's young, and you know, young people kind of get caught up in social media and whatnot. But he's definitely a bright future ahead of him. He's a top class talent, and I know Offaly are really getting a good forward for the next 10 years anyways, at least.
He seems like an awfully good player, I must say. But so Anton, tell me this. You said you were 28 a couple of minutes ago. like, do you feel like your kind of clock's running out with Offaly, or do you have another couple of years in the tank?
Well, I mind myself very well. Like, with my job, I'm in the army in Newbridge there, and I have a good job there. So I'm lucky in terms of, say, if I have a game on a Sunday afternoon, a league game or a championship game, like, say, on a Monday morning when I go to work, I'm in the pool at 9:30. I'm doing my recovery on the bike. I'm into the swimming pool. I've my evening off, say, as such. So I'm kind of, I'm lucky in that regard. I've done great facilities on my doorstep. Whereas, say, for a lad who could be in Dublin working maybe a 9-to-6 job, he still has to do his recovery in the evenings. Like, it's a lot harder for that type of player. But say, my job, I'm lucky. I've plenty of time in my hands. So I kind of be hoping to push it as long as I can, to be honest. I feel good at the moment. I feel fresh. I've no injuries, thank God. So I'd be hoping to go as long as I can. But I know when the time's right, when to go. But I'd be hoping maybe another 4 or 5 years at least that's left in the body anyways.
And do you feel like this, like as Mick was mentioning there, like, do you feel like these lads can bring you on and possibly give a league title, a Leinster title?
Yeah, definitely. Especially the two Keens, they're two attacking forwards to play in the full forward lane. So, and I play in the full forward lane. So straight away, they're pushing for my play. So like that keeps me on my toes. It keeps me fresh. It keeps me working hard. But yeah, I'd be hoping for definitely a league title in the next 3 or 4 years. Definitely get out of Division 3 and pushing to a Leinster final. If I could stay maybe in 3 or 4 years, we could look at maybe getting to a Leinster final and challenging the Dubs. Maybe, sure, isn't that something to aim towards and look forward towards, you know?
Anton, 2018 was probably a tough year for Offaly with the debacle with Stephen Wallace and stuff. Was that hard as a group of players to deal with all the talk around that?
Yeah, it was very difficult. Yeah, I was captain at the time, and it wasn't easy, to be honest. We obviously lost to Wicklow in the first round, and then Stephen had been relieved of his duties then to choose the night after. And there's no point in saying that now. It was very difficult. We had no manager. I remember the Wednesday morning, we were after leaving McCormick, and Stephen had left. Him and Billy Sheehan were over us, and they had left. So, like, Wednesday morning, it was kind of, we'd lower it, we're in limbo. So I remember picking up the phone to Johnny Doyle in Kildare, having a good chat with Johnny. And Johnny had trained us then the Friday night. And then by the weekend, Paul Rouse had come in on board, and he was the interim manager. So it was tough. It was tough. We only scraped stead in Division 3 again. Same thing last day. We bet Westmead down in Mullingar. They were kind of safe enough, and the game meant nothing to them. So we were lucky in that regard, we had set up. But yeah, regarding 2018, it was a bit of a shambles, to be honest, yeah. But in fairness to Paul, when he came in, we had a great 6-week period when Paul had come in. Lads really bought into it. We said we'd nothing to lose. We'd give the qualifiers a bit of a crack. We were actually unfortunate to lose to Clare in the qualifiers that year. We only lost by a point until the more. But looking back now, it kind of was a bit of a shambles, the whole thing. Yeah, it was, yeah. There's no point in saying otherwise.
And I mean, you obviously were captain, so you would have been close enough to Stephen Wallace. Was it disappointing that he was let go? Were the players rowing in behind him most of the time?
Yeah, well, yeah. See, it was a difficult one because as a player, your job is to get on with playing football. It's not to, like, off-field matters. It's not really got to do with any of the players, you know. And I remember chatting to the lads before we had trained the Tuesday night, and I really reiterated that point that, like, essentially whatever happens after tonight, it's nothing to do with us. We were willing to go out and train tonight under Stephen Wallace. And that was our stance on it. Like, after that, what the county board do or whatever anyone else does is out of our control. We can't. That was completely out of our control. They decided to relieve Stephen Wallace for our duty. So, like, that was nothing we could do. Like, we were happy to continue under Stephen, but obviously they felt otherwise. So there was nothing we could do at that stage. So then Paul was appointed, and then we just got on with it. Our job was to play football, and that was our stance from the get-go. You know?
Yeah. I suppose this is the last one for me, Anton. I love asking this, John knows. The best player you played with and the best player you played against over the last few years?
Best player I played with? Jesus, I played with a few good ones. Sure, I suppose keeping close to home, I suppose Niall McNamee is obviously the best player I've ever played with within Offaly. But when I was in school in Eton Derry, I don't know if you know a fella called Sean Hurley. He's Kildare.
Kildare midfielder.
Kildare midfielder, yeah. He was a top-class footballer, yeah. He was an all-rounder. Now, I was very lucky to play in Eton Derry. We'd some very good footballers. Daniel Finn was there. Paul Cribben was there. But talented-wise, you know, Sean Hurley had everything. He was so talented. I loved playing with him in school. He was an exceptional footballer.
But I suppose he's not playing anymore, is he?
No, he actually got two hip operations. He's kind of under pressure now with his hips. He just plays a bit of club football. But I'd say if he got himself right, he's still good enough to be McAleer. He's an exceptional footballer. I always rate him very highly playing with him, and even when I played against him against Kildare, he was always top class. You know, I'd always be wary of him. But if I had to go closer to home, Niall McNamee. But then if I had to pick outside, I'd say Sean Hurley was probably one of the best players I've ever played with outside of.
Interesting choice.
Arnie, are you enjoying the kind of professionalism involved in the GAA at the minute? Do you enjoy the whole routine off it, Anton?
Oh, I love it. I think it's the only way to go, especially when you're putting so much time and effort into it. I love the, like, the say you're going training, you're getting your proper gym programs, you're getting your proper, say, video analysis work, you're getting your proper, we have a dietitian with us, you're getting your proper nutrition on board. Like, it is really professional at the end of the day. You're giving so much time to it, and like the least we deserve back is that bit of professionalism. I know it's not professional, but like, it might as well be in my eyes anyways, because like, you're training 4 or 5 nights a week, you have your proper video analysis, you have your nutrition, as I said, you have your strength and condition. Like, I was only listening to a podcast 2 weeks ago with John Egan and Tomás O'Shea, and he was saying in some cases, like, the GAA is more professional than some Premier League clubs and the way they carry out their business, you know. It's up there with what they're doing. So kind of, it is really professional at the end of the day, but we're not getting paid for it. That's all, really.
Jeez, I tell you what, Anton, that's a refreshing opinion, because it's all very negative at the minute.
Yeah, well, I'm just going from my point of view with Offie and what we're doing. Like, we have a nutritionist, we've top-class video analysis, we've top-class strength and condition, we've top-class football coach, we've a goalkeeping coach. Like, we don't want for anything, I have to say. We're very well looked after in all regards. So, in my eyes, we're doing it professionally. Even though we're not professional, we are doing it the proper way, you know.
And to top it all off, you've a Calvin man involved with you, so you can't go wrong.
No, you can't go wrong. How could you go wrong with a Calvin man?
Anton, thanks very much for doing that. Really appreciate it.
No bother, lads. Thanks, William, for having me. Really.
Cheers, Anton. Thanks very much.
Take care. Bye-bye. Bye.
Really good chat there with Anton Sullivan, and thanks again, Anton, for coming on. So we'll be back after the break with our chat with Shiroz Akram. Stay tuned. Thanks a lot.
Hello and welcome to the Mick and Mac Football Podcast. I'm John and I'm joined by Mick. And today we are welcomed by Shiroz Akram. Shiroz, how are you?
I'm good, now yourself. Thanks for having me, guys.
And Mick, how are you?
All good, Mac. How are you?
All good, nerd, bud. All good, nerd.
You didn't slag me off there.
It's nice to be nice, buddy. So, Shiroz, how are you today? How are you finding lockdown?
Good question. It's strange now, you know. It's normality now could be a lot different to what it used to be, so you're trying to get used to everything in regards to social distancing, and just even when you meet people, you know, you'd give them a fist bump or a shake of the hands. Now it's strange when you kind of meet somebody, you're kind of wondering, what do I do here? Or is it a wave, or is it a, you know? So it's strange times.
Okay. Like, how are you finding the kind of no football and no kind of training at the minute? Like, has it been tough on you?
The first couple of weeks now, it was really strange and tough, because I was finishing off my college thesis at the time, and I kind of used football and training as a break from it all, but you couldn't really do that because you were kind of tied to your own home or your 2km radius. So I found it tough at the start, but then when things started to ease off a bit, I live by the soccer pitch and GAA pitch in Ballyhadrain, so I was meeting one of my friends, and then we were just going for runs and stuff together, keeping our distance obviously, but just getting back up training, getting out, enjoying, I suppose, training and taking a break from my studies.
And, like, have you enjoyed the kind of lockdown, like, kind of interacting maybe more with your friends and family, Shiroz?
It's been nice to be home now, to be honest, because generally I wouldn't really get a lot of time at home. I'd be in Dublin Monday to Friday, and then you'd be back home, you'd be training, and then I've set up a company called GRG Sports, so I'd be busy doing a bit of work with that on a Saturday and Sunday, and then you're back up the road to get up to Dublin, and then you're just going into another week. So you wouldn't really get a lot of time at home. to be able to spend that time with my parents and my brother, it's been nice. Yeah.
And you mentioned your company there. Tell us a bit about that, Charouse.
Yeah, so it's called GRG Sports. We're on all social media platforms. We have a website if anyone wants to look at it. I set it up with Tom Parsons, another Mayo guy, and Keane Hanley. Keane to be one of my really good friends now from a young age. So three of us put our heads together and kind of set up a sports apparel company. We do team orders. We do customized gear for teams. We've got all casual wear and then specific team wear for specific sports, which is all, again, available on our website if people wanted to take a look at it.
Sounds good, Shro. Sounds good.
Shaz, you just finished your final year in DCU. How did that go for you?
Like I mentioned earlier, it was strange. So I was meant to be doing my thesis and a bit of testing and stuff in the lab in DCU. But then with COVID and stuff happening, all of that was kind of shut down. So it was strange because this is the first year that guys haven't been able to do their thesis on college and on campus with testing and stuff. So we were meant to be testing pulmonary hypertension patients in the lab. So they'd be kind of a very vulnerable group. So we're meant to be testing on them and then doing our kind of a research and then write up and stuff on it. But with COVID and lockdown happening, that was kind of completely shut down. So then we just had to do with a research-based literature review more so than an actual project, if you get what I mean. And then kind of base our results and conclusions on other studies. So we actually missed out on the hands-on experience of doing this stuff ourselves. But at the same time, it's good to be done. And everyone was in the same boat as me. So happy to be finished.
And did you find that harder doing it? It was less practical, I suppose. Was it harder just writing the literature review out and stuff?
You had to do more research, so yeah. It made it a bit more difficult. And then just kind of having to liaise over and back with your supervisor and project coordinator and stuff, I suppose that added a bit to it. Yeah. Whereas on campus, when you're running the tests and stuff, you're kind of meeting them face-to-face and you have that interaction there. So I suppose it did make it a bit more difficult, yeah.
And what's the plan for next year?
I'm hoping to do a master's in business and entrepreneurship in TUD, all going well. So I know in the next couple of weeks, based on results and based on my application and stuff. So touch wood, I get in for next year and get that done.
Yeah. Best of luck. Yeah, I'm not sure, you know, my brother, you're in the same boat as yourself. You're both stressed over the last few weeks doing that.
yeah. So it's strange, but look, it's part and parcel of life, I suppose.
And what's the story with training now with Valadrine? You hope to get back soon enough?
Well, we're hoping to be back on the 29th. I know there's a couple of other clubs around us training, but our management have taken a completely different approach in regards to insurance and stuff. So we could be training on, let's say, soccer pitches and community pitches, but they believe that, I suppose, we need to be more efficient with what we do when we get back. And they're looking at the health and safety of us as players. If somebody gets injured, you could be out of pocket for a surgery, a scan, or whatever else, you know. So money could be tight with COVID and stuff anyway, so they don't want to be putting us under more financial pressure. So we've kind of completely just put it off until the GA pitches are fully open and we can go back.
And so how are you kind of keeping yourself in shape over the last while, like to make sure you're ready for the 29th?
Well, again, we've been given running programs to do on our own accord. They're not pushed, they're not compulsory, completely voluntary. But myself and one of my mates, Keane Hanley, that I've set up the company with, we meet up 3 to 4 times a week and we're going for our longer runs or shorter runs, and then a bit of ball work. So we have a couple of balls between us just doing our skills in our own garden. So we're trying to keep up as much as we can.
And has the championships been set up for Mayo now for this year?
Yeah, so we've been given a full plan now. So I think it's non-contact training on the 29th, and then middle of July you're back to contact training. And then the first week in August is the first round of championship, and then championship is ran off in, I think, 6-7 weeks. So it'll be a game on game every week, and then after the group stages, we have a week break. So in Mayo, it works a bit different. So we have 4 groups of 4, and you play everyone in the group once, and then top 2 teams go through to the quarterfinals, and then a semi-final final.
And what would the hopes for your club be this year?
So we were in the county final last year. We lost out to Ballintubber at the end. So hopefully, all going well, we can go the one step further and actually win it out. And that would be the ultimate goal. But it's tough to know what sort of shape guys are coming in, and with the lack of training and stuff, there could be a lot of soft tissue injuries, you know. So it's all dependent on how the next 8 or 9 week go once we're back out.
Is that something you worry about, though, I suppose, the soft tissue injuries? Because I see even in the Premier League and the German League, there's been so many injuries in the first few weeks.
I think it is going to be something that is going to pop up a lot. So I suppose it's whatever team can manage their injuries and manage their players better and keep everyone fit. I think that's what it's going to come down to rather than the physical shape you're in. I think it's just going to be about keeping guys on the pitch so they can perform and whatever they can do. Rather than boys missing through injury, and you can lose out on a crucial player or a key player. Like for us, we have a number of main guys. If we kind of lose out on them, we wouldn't be as strong from 20 to 25, whereas we'd have a good 20, 22 players, you know. We kind of more so relying on the first 22, 23 players. Yeah.
Your background in sports science will come in handy now.
It does. It's funny now because there's a lot of guys in Balhadrin, my club, that are in that field. That's why I actually went into it. So my good mate, Keane Hanley's brother, Andrew Hanley, he's out in Florida. He's in the SNC background. Mm. Barry Solon, he's the first team SNC for Arsenal.
Yeah.
So he's from Balhadrin. And then Andy has a gym in Castlebar. So again, he has that background. And then two or three of us staff, again, have the background in SNC and PT and stuff. So there's about seven or eight of us. So there's a good blend of us here.
No excuses for any injuries in your team.
Well, not on paper, but it's about getting the guys through the work. So hopefully we can minimise that.
Good stuff.
And suppose, Shaz, like, how have you kind of found integrating with some of the Mayo lads? Like, are they a nice bunch to deal with?
In what sense now, John? Sorry.
Just in terms of kind of like their attitude towards football, towards training, towards life.
That's the closest I've come to an elite environment. So the guys are very driven and motivated for not just football now, for every aspect of their life, whether that's studies, whether that's work, whatever it might be. Like if you look at an inter-county schedule, guys are putting in about 30, 35 hours a week in around training. So that's nearly a full-time job. And then they've got their job on top of it. Then you've got your relationships, your family, your downtime, your recovery. So it's a very busy and hectic week. So for somebody that's working full-time, working in Dublin, you're training in the Mayo, these guys are finishing work at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock to get home in time for training. That means they're in work early that morning or they're making up the hours the following day. So they're very driven individuals, as I found. And then lately, nutrition has been really big in GAA. Before, there wasn't as much of an emphasis on it. But the last 2, 3, 4 years, I think nutrition is getting really big. So then guys are preparing meals and they're eating clean and eating well. But again, that takes time too. So I think the whole inter-county circle now, people are very motivated and driven in all aspects of life to do well in college, to do well in football, to do well in work. And then obviously you want to keep your friends, social life, girlfriends, wives, all that happy too. So there's a lot to it.
And like, how have you enjoyed kind of like the routine of the football that brings to your life, Shaz? Because like it is obviously fairly demanding. Like, do you enjoy the whole routine and buzz?
Definitely, yes. You wouldn't do it. You wouldn't put yourself through that if you didn't. You have to enjoy whatever you do, whether that's college, work, whatever that might be. You have to enjoy it. So I think I've loved it. At times it can be struggling trying to get everything managed and kind of get the time for everything. But you kind of have to plan and structure around it. And if you've got that in place, I think you're in a good place.
Shaz, your story kind of fascinates me. So you left 4 years of age from Pakistan, or was it to come over to Ireland?
Yes, so I turned five, I think, within 2 or 3 weeks of getting to Ireland, yes.
Yeah. And what made your family choose Ireland, and I suppose Mayo especially?
It's funny now, we're actually not in Mayo, we're in Roscommon. We're on the border of Mayo and Roscommon. So Valhadrin's actually in Roscommon. So I get a bit of stick about that, yeah. That I'm actually a Rossi and not Mayo. But no, my parents actually came here because my mum's side of the family, a few of our brothers were already in Balhadrin, and okay. This is where they were set up. So I suppose we just kind of followed suit with them, and they helped us get integrated into the area and get used to life outside of Pakistan in a new country. So that's why it worked. Then work.
Did you find it hard to settle in? I know you said your family over here, that how you made a difference.
It helped in a certain sense. But again, everything was new. Like, I'm not sure if you've seen pictures or videos of Pakistan. It's kind of developing country, roads and stuff, everything, food, everything's completely different. And then you're coming to a new country where the language barrier is there too as well, you know. I remember my first couple of weeks, so it was January when we moved over, and I started off in primary school and I didn't have a word of English. So I'm trying to communicate with guys and yeses and nos, and I'm nodding my head and going this and that, but I could be saying yes and I could be going like this with my head. So like communication was an issue at the start. But over time, I got to kind of learn the language and I got a bit of extra help at the first couple of years, and I eventually got over it. Now I have a thick Mayo accent, I'm told many a time. So yeah, it's not an issue anymore.
So at that time, were you doing more English lessons outside of school, or was all just in school?
In school and a bit of help outside of school just to catch up with everyone, because again, kids had a head start, yeah. English being their first language. But I picked it up now, and I think first 3 or 4 years. So by I think second class, I had caught up with the rest of the class, and then I done Irish as normal from the start too. So I was learning two languages from the start.
Fair play to you, yeah. And I mean, how welcoming were the community in Balhadrin?
Balhadrin is actually one of the more welcoming towns in Ireland. For a small kind of a rural area, they were really welcoming. Like the GAA community especially took me and my family in, and other people from Pakistani background in, and really welcomed us and made us feel at home. Helped us out with everything really, not just the football side of it. Me especially, you know, in school, outside of school, like socially with friends, and then just advice from guys. You know, I still go to a number of guys for advice. Andy, I've mentioned it a couple of times, he's helped me so much. I can't be grateful enough for what he's done. And then my friends, parents, you know, they've done a lot of taxiing over and back to games, trainings and stuff. So they all played their part, you know.
Yeah. You mentioned Andy there. I mean, how important was he? What would he do to help you out so much those early years?
I suppose, first of all, get me involved in the sport. So I think him and two or three other guys were the main kind of guys involved in pushing me and encouraging me to pick up the sport, and then helping me develop my skills and stuff. So like I said, with English, I didn't really know the English language at the start. But then with Gaelic football, I didn't know the rules. It was an alien sport for me. So I struggled with the rules a lot, because I was used to watching soccer, so I didn't really get the point of picking the ball up with the toe under the ball and the points aspect of it. So I was kind of taking more like soccer. I'd pick it up off the ground, or I'd soccer it. But eventually now, I suppose, bettered into me, and I got the rules, and then they helped me just develop my skills with extra sessions and stuff. So, yeah, no, they were very good to me.
And you returned to Pakistan in 2018, was it after the Kildare game?
Yes.
Tell us about the life there when you went back. Was it an eye-opener for you?
So that was my first time going back since I'd come over as a child. So I had a few memories of childhood in Pakistan, but not a lot. I didn't remember kind of a lot of the stuff. So when I went over, it was like seeing everything for the first time. It's like going to a new country and you're kind of looking and you're like, yeah. Wow, your kind of jaws dropped and you're like, wow, I could have been actually living here. Like, this could have been my life, you know? It was a massive eye-opener. To see the country I'm living in and then where I'm living now, you know, even the opportunities in education and stuff, you wouldn't really get that in Pakistan. And just the way of living, the roads, it's like people are lunatics on the road over there. So there's no certain motorways and stuff that are developed, but then other, it could be gravel, it could be stone, it could be sand. There's not proper tar macadam on the roads. And there's no real rules of the road. So If you can fit your car or motorbike or whatever you're driving, or donkey and cart is a big mode of transport out there too, and rickshaws. So if you can fit it into a certain area or a lane, it's a lane. So you kind of make your own lanes. And then even on the motorways, I found you could have 3 or 4 lanes going in one direction, and then out of nowhere, you could have a motorbike coming at you or a bus coming at you. And I was just kind of thinking, this is nuts, like, you know. You'd be kind of gripping onto the handlebars, fearing for your life. Yeah, so it was strange.
What are the biggest differences, I suppose, you know, say it's a developing country. What are the massive differences between Ireland and Pakistan that you find when you went over there?
So the way of living, so people live kind of completely different. Everything's kind of on stalls and markets. So imagine Ireland going back maybe 70, 80 years, where you just go down to your local market and you get your fresh fruit, veg, meats and stuff. It's all kind of on stalls. So there's no real big shops, not in the smaller villages and towns. Maybe in the big cities there is, but at the smaller villages where I grew up in Harunabad, so that's where my family are based.
Yeah.
So going back, you're literally just driving around. It's your favorite mode of transport is the motorbike. So there's four or five people on a motorbike, and I'm just kind of looking, thinking, how can you even fit four people on a motorbike, you know? And then you're just going in, you're picking up your veg and you're picking up your fruit daily. And then milk again comes in packets, or there's a guy daily coming around giving milk. So it's maybe Ireland going back 60 years. And then cars, yeah, kind of have to be on the rich side of it to have a car. And then even the houses. So a lot of the houses are open plan. So there's an open yard in the middle of each house that's open. And then people at night sleep out. So it's like a movable bed kind of a thing that you can move in and out. And then when it gets cold, they kind of go into the bedrooms, which are obviously covered and closed. But during the summer months, people would sleep out, and then lizards and stuff. So, you know, there's all that side of it too. So it was strange for me. When I went back, I was afraid to sleep out. So I actually slept in the bedroom and I got the air conditioning on. The granny and granddad had me in the bedroom with the air conditioning, but they would have slept outside in the courtyard.
And you mentioned your granny and granddad there. I mean, was that the first time you'd seen them since you were 4 years of age?
No, so they've been over to Ireland quite a bit. So I think before that, I might have been 6 or 7 years now. Still quite a bit of time. They'd be very old now, so granny finds it difficult to travel. So that's why they haven't been over recently. So they're touching 90. You know, granddad could be over 90. Granddad's flying now, but granny would be very sick. So that's why I kind of went over to see the granny. I hadn't seen her in a while. So it's nice to see them.
Is it a safe country?
Sure. It would be, yes. So, like, you kind of need to have your wits about you. Like, people are just there. They're trying to make a living, you know, any way they can, a fast living, an easy living. But it would be safe, but then there's certain parts of it, like anywhere, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
If you go to certain parts of Ireland, I'm not going to mention any places now here.
Cavan.
you know, they could be, you kind of... You'd want to keep your wits about you in them sort of areas too. So it's the same anywhere, America, England, Ireland, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it will be safe. For me, yes. But let's say if you were a white person going in, you know, you'd need to have somebody from the locality looking after you. You know, you wouldn't just go in there and kind of go around yourself, because you would be robbed, like you would be mugged.
Yeah.
Like even myself now, I would have dressed differently. But I would have known from my parents and my relations to kind of keep an eye out for certain things. Like even, let's say, in the airport, when you go in, guards are looking to take your luggage. So they're looking to bring your luggage out for you. So they'll do that and they'll fly you through security and whatever. So you mightn't have to go through a single security check. But then they won't give your luggage back until you give them money.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of stuff.
Just a different culture.
Yeah. So they'd be like to me, oh, look, I'll get you through security so you don't have to worry about it. I was like, I don't have to worry about anything because I'm not bringing anything that I should be worrying about, you know. I'm happy to go through. I have everything here. And they're like, well, we'll get you out quicker. I was like, I don't mind taking my time. So you just have to have your wits about you. But no, it's fine. It's fine.
It's very interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
So tell me about the kind of setup in DCU. I think I've seen a picture a couple of years ago. Do you know Keane McManus, Shaz?
I do.
Yeah, I know Keane well. Like, what was he like to play with? I think Tomás Galligan and some of them boys.
So that would have been actually my friend group in first year. Funny you mentioned them. So you had Tomás Galligan, Keane McManus, Matty McKenna, David Brady, Pearson.
Oh, some bubblers, yes.
A few of us from Mayo. So that was kind of our click of friends in first year. Would have hung out with them, played football with them, socialised with them. So that was kind of our close-knit group. And good guys, you know, again, all coming from different parts of the country. So you're kind of learning a bit about them, bringing different aspects of football. So a lot of them are boys, or northern boys, so bringing that defensive crap of football, you know. So I suppose we had to take it all on board and kind of find the right balance. And on that fresher team, we actually ended up winning fresher league and championship with that group. So we were a really talented group, really talented guys now.
Yeah, and like say Keane's, Tomás and Matty's kind of professionals. Jesus, like, I was in school with them. They're fierce good footballers and everything they've done. Like, did you learn much from, say, the likes of McManus and McKenna there?
Definitely, yeah. So, like, defensive-wise, Mayo wouldn't really have been known for defensive football. We always kind of played expansive football. So they helped us really, really to kind of sharpen up our skills in defensive areas, and not going to give them credit for it, but even to defend a bit better, let's say, you know, because they're so used to defending, they were able to teach us a few things on defending. yeah, so we did now. We learned a few bits off them just to close out a game and stuff too, so. Yeah, no, the guys were good to learn off.
Class players.
What is some racism is obviously something that's come up a lot, Shaz, at the moment in sport. Is that something you've ever encountered in GAA?
I would have, yes, grown up a few times. But even outside of GAA, you kind of, before you pass it off, and you mightn't think it's racist, but looking back at it and articles and stuff coming out, and you're reading other people's experiences, and you kind of think back, actually, do you know what? I had that experience too. You mightn't have looked at it as racism back then, but now thinking about it, actually, some of them instances could have been quite racist too. So I think, off the top of my head, I think I can think of three incidents on a GAA pitch where I was racially abused. Yeah, it's strange, you know. Like generally, I'd be a cool kind of a calm kind of a head, wouldn't really lose my plot. But one of the incidents now, I lost it. I was coming back from an injury. I hadn't played football in maybe 6 or 7 months. Came on, and then within the first few minutes, got a bit of a comment, and I lost the plot, you know. But it wouldn't be like me. And then the guy that done it, I'd actually know him, met him then a few months later, and he apologised to me. So I think it's in the heat of the moment. He didn't realise it, and he said it. But I think it's just about educating people what you can see and what you can't see and how it might come across to the person. I think a lot of the times people don't realise and they just say it, and then afterwards they regret it, which was the case in his end. And he did come and personally apologise to me, which was nice too.
Yeah, it's something, I suppose. But what sort of comments, if you can repeat, like what were they kind of saying to you? Like,
Well, one of them that stands out to me now, it was a county semi-final. One of the players from the opposition team, again, I won't go naming names, just roared out now, like, I was kind of playing in front of him as a kind of a sweeper and as an extra defender. And the ball was kept being kicked into me, and he just roared out, "Stop kicking into that black C-U-N-T."
Oh my God.
Like, it wasn't just I that heard it, everyone heard it, you know. And he was sent off. I'm not sure what happened to it. I didn't pay much heed to it. I was concerned about playing my football. To me, if people are making comments, it's obviously I'm doing something right for them to make them comments, or they wouldn't be saying anything. That's how I took it. But the referee sent him off in that game. I'm not sure if it was followed up and made a complaint or what was done of it. And I don't think there was any protocols or any kind of procedures around the time either, with counties and with GAA. And again, I didn't look too far into it, and I didn't dwell into it. I just kind of let it go. That's one of the instances I can remember. And then when I was younger, it was something similar. And then the one where I lost the plot, again, similar comment. So yeah, that'd be kind of the main things. And then you'd hear people saying, "Oh, go back to where you came from," and that sort of stuff too. But that's just kind of, you'd kind of hear them, and the kind of in the background, it wouldn't be said directly to you. Like, they'd nearly be afraid to say it to you, you know. If you're going to say something, I'd nearly prefer to say it to your face rather than kind of saying it behind your back too, which says a lot about that person, I suppose, you know. That you're not even man enough to say it to the person that you're aiming it at.
Yeah, that's the thing. People who say these comments are only doing them because they're jealous, or you're doing something better than they are, essentially. And I mean, is the GAA, do you think the GAA do enough in this area? Kind of stuff.
Previously, now looking back at it, there was no kind of rules and procedures or whatever, you know. But lately, now I know Ger McTavish now with the GAA is doing really good work. I've actually helped her with a couple of education workshops on racism and how to kind of deal with it if you're a player, if you're a coach or whatever. So they are kind of getting more into it and kind of setting out things in stone. Like with anything else, you know, if you kind of abuse a referee or you touch a referee or you hit somebody, you know exactly what will happen. There's a 3-match ban or a 5-match ban, or there's a couple of weeks ban. You kind of need to have something set in stone to help out the referees and the officials too, so they know exactly, well, okay, we can go to this part of the rule book and this is what it says. This is what should be happening, you know. I don't think there's that in place at the moment, but they are kind of, because of everything happening lately, I think the GAA are working on getting something done, and then Ger's doing really good work on educating kids, which I think is the most important part. Kids need to be educated. Like there's a really good video, you might have seen it, of two kids, one white kid and one black kid, and like, kids don't know anything about racism, you know. So if you can teach them racist comments, you can definitely teach them not to be racist, you know, or be anti-racism or anti-racist, which is a big thing at the moment too, which I think people should be too.
Yeah, and hopefully more can be done about it, and it shouldn't be tolerated whatsoever. I suppose, what are the hopes for the future for you, Shaz? Are you hoping to break into that Mayo panel now?
Definitely, yes. That's always kind of been a name of mine, or kind of something I've always looked up to eventually break into the team and hopefully play some part in Mayo football. That's, again, if I'm good enough. If I'm not, I suppose I learned that pretty quick. When you're involved at that elite level, you learn really quick if you're cut for it or you're not. So hopefully I can make the step up and have a good few years playing Mayo football.
Have you been involved at all this year?
No, so I left the panel last year. I had a lot going on with setting up the company. I was busy with college, and then I had a few things going on at home. So I had a chat with James Horn, and I ended up leaving the panel. So I left the panel, and then I ended up going to America in the end, actually. But yeah, no, so college is done now, and then company's kind of in a good place. And I sorted out a few things going on outside of football and at home and stuff. So I'm in a good place now. Hopefully I can have a good year with the club and be invited back in for a trial.
Yeah. And you mentioned your company there, so when are you going to sponsor us?
who's us precisely now? The podcast?
Yeah.
Or the club? I'm sure we can work something out for you guys now. Yeah.
The money lesson. Yeah, that was brilliant, Shaz. Thanks very much for doing that.
No problem at all. I hope it came across well. Thanks for inviting me to Michael and John. Hope it goes well for you guys now. Best of luck with it.
Appreciate it.
Thanks
a million. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Thank you.
Thanks for listening in. And don't forget that you can follow the Mick and Mac GAA Football Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, and we are on Spotify, as well as all other podcast platforms.